two seat sofas are slightly higher than on that, and therefore they're more comfortable for me.
Okay. Well, here we are, having moved across the room here in the Anthony home. And again, I'm Carrie Klein, and we're here with the Anthonys and with Michael Klein, and it's the 19th of April, 2001. Would you introduce yourself?
My name is Reed Anthony.
And your date of birth?
Born November
17, 1928. Okay, and tell us about your people and where you were raised.
Well, I was born in Boston, and my parents lived in the Charles Sprague Sargent Estate in Chestnut Hill, Mass., outside of Boston, until 1933. When father was transferred from his work in Boston to the New York office of his firm, and the family moved to Greenwich, Connecticut, and lived there through the rest of the until 1942, and then moved to Manhattan. Meanwhile, I went to school at Greenwich Country Day School through grade 8, and in 1942 went off to boarding school at Milton Academy, Milton, Mass. Where I will shortly have my 65th reunion in May, and was at Milton for 4 very important years, and thence to Harvard College from 1946 to 1950.
Studying?
My major was English literature, which wasn't very relevant to what I went on to do, which was to work in the financial industry. First in Boston at a stockbroker's office, and transferred after a couple of years to a investment counsel firm in Boston, and was there for the ensuing 15 years, I guess, 1953 to 1968, first as a research analyst on various industries, in particular the railroad industry and the gas utility industry and the electric utility industry. And then after about 7 or 8 years of that, at my own request, transferred to within this firm to working with clients, advising and managing client accounts, investing client accounts, until 1968, when I was recruited to work at Massachusetts Audubon Society and Lincoln as their financial officer, their treasurer. And I worked happily there from 1968 to 1981. Doing a variety of things, but basically business management, nothing to do with, I mean, nobody regarded me as a ornithologist or anything, but I was working on financial planning for each of a dozen sanctuaries that the society then owned that were staffed. The society has since become much bigger and it has much more resources now than it did then. Eventually, in the early 1980s, I went back to investment advice, an investment advisory firm, not the one that I had left, but another one in downtown Boston, and worked there for a number of years until I retired at age 62, which would have been 1990, I guess. Although I still keep in quite close touch with the people at that last investment advisory firm. I go in there and attend their meetings from time to time, and I've sent them some clients, and I'm a close personal friend of the founder of the firm, and have a good deal of respect for them. So that's my occupational history, pretty much. As to my outside activities, as I guess Barb mentioned, I have been close to the Concord Free Public Library for a long time. I was appointed to the Concord Library Committee in 1960, and served 2 3-year terms on that. The governance of the library being, of the Concord Library being split between the committee, which is appointed by the town the selectman and the town manager, and the library trustees, commonly referred to as the library corporation, which own the physical plant and a lot of the book collection, and an endowment which provides the financial resources to take care of the physical plant. And when I finished on the library committee, I was elected to the library corporation, and I served on that for 20-some years until 1988, I think. So I've had those connections with the library from the early 60s to the late 80s. And since then, I've been a volunteer in the library for a few hours a week in recent times, working for Leslie Wilson.
A volunteer?
Yeah, doing unskilled chores generally. Sometimes proofreading stuff for Leslie, but keeping files or straightening out stuff that doesn't require a high amount of background or knowledge or skill. But I enjoy the place and the people who work there.
What drew you to the library initially?
Fondness for books, I guess.
Or what enticed you to remain all those years?
The people. I've had pleasant relationships with a succession of directors of the library, one of whom we keep in quite close touch with, who retired from 20-odd years as director and has lived in rural Indiana for the last 25 years, and we're in frequent contact with her.
Named?
Rosemary Mitten Stifler.
Spelled?
Her last name, Stiffler. Morgantown, Indiana. We visited her and she's visited us. She comes back to Concord once or twice a year.
And Mitten spelled like mittens?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Her successor was Barbara Powell, who lives in Concord still, who retired 2 years ago.
Can you almost trace the difference in vision by who was?
Oh, they're quite different people, but they each did a good job as far as I can perceive. But they weren't working for me, because during the period of their tenancy, I was on the library trustees, which doesn't have anything to do with the administration of the personnel, the staff. The committee is supposed to be in charge of the staff. Although I don't think that nowadays the director is, as far as I can make out, chosen by the committee. That seems to me to be done in the town office by the town director of personnel and the town manager and the selectmen. I don't know.
So that's a shift.
Yeah, but don't take that as gospel. It's just my impression. Carrie Cronin, the present director, I'm quite sure was not. Although I'm sure she was in the latter stages of screening, she must have been known to the committee, but I don't think she was selected by the library committee. Anyhow, I the library has always interested me, and its physical renovation, which has taken place at least twice while I've had any connection with it, at the main building, and more recently, of course, the Loring N. Fowler Branch Library here in West Concord just completed a total modernization, has been of interest too. I spent a couple of hours there at the Fowler Branch this morning because I needed to get out of the way here of the lady who was cleaning this place, but it's a very pleasant, beautifully modernized building.
There must have been some interesting stories involved in the renovations and who wanted what and why. And
well, they've been fortunate to have a really competent architect, and the work done at the Fowler Branch was really extraordinary job. I mean, the builder, I've never seen such intricate and exacting work done in such refinement. It's just amazing. You, I guess, won't have any chance to see it, but it's very impressive. I've also, as was mentioned earlier, at one time or another, been interested in the Concord Art Association, although I'm nothing more than a member now. I was 25 years or so ago a treasurer and a director for a while, and a member of the directors, I should say.
Board of directors.
I'm not at all now.
What's the mission of the organization?
The Art Association was formed in the early 1920s by a woman who owned a elegant early late 18th century house on Lexington Road, and a lot of pictures, I guess, and she set up a 501c3, or what became a 501c3 nonprofit for the purpose of allowing local artists to exhibit their work. It was really the exhibit and sell their work. It's really an art gallery, properly. It has shows that are borrowed from other organizations, but it also hangs the work of artists who are displaying their work for sale. It's curious to me as really a competitor to a commercial art gallery. I've also had for 30 odd years a connection with Fruitlands Museum in Harvard, which my present status there, almost uniquely, is trustee emeritus, which is that organization was formed in the early years of the 20th century by a woman named Clara Endicott Sears, who had 210 acres on a hillside facing west towards Mount Wachusett, and built a elegant house on Prospect Hill Road, and sort of discovered that down at the foot of the meadow was a farmhouse which had been occupied for a year in the 1840s by people from Concord.
Bronson Alcott.
Bronson Alcott and a few others who thought they would set up a separate community, which was a spectacular failure, but it has a certain amount of immortality. And she, Miss Sears, moved from another location in Harvard, in the town of Harvard, a meeting house built by Shakers, by the Shaker community, and she built two other buildings, one to house artifacts of Native Americans, and the other to house the artworks of Hudson River landscape artists and portrait artists, American portrait artists. Fruitlands Museum consists of all of these enterprises that Miss Sears set up, fortunately, with an endowment. And for the last 90 or 100 years has been a seasonally operated public museum. And as I started by saying, I've spent a certain amount of time as part of the governance of that.
Why?
Because a longtime friend of mine in the 1970s, who was a director, invited me out to look at it and urged me to join in helping to run it. And I liked it. I've always liked museums, and I like that one.
So it was a spectacular failure, Fruitlands was.
The thing that Bronson Alcott set up, which is a fraction of what the museum that Miss Sears initiated years and years later, was a failure. But,
so a spectacular failure, in fact.
Well, yes, because he had such ambition for its perpetuity, and it didn't even last. It lasted just about 8 months, I think.
What happened?
Well, some key figures fell into disputes and left in anger, and they ran out of money, didn't they?
and they weren't going to use anything from any animals, so you know, they couldn't have any wool clothes, and they couldn't use cotton because it was harvested by slaves, if you know what I mean, by harvested, and also they knew beans about farming, and so they didn't know how to plant things, and they were going to just eat all their own food. And I guess Bronson Alka almost died, and finally somebody came and stuck him in a sledge and took him to their house in nearby Still River. But
stuck him in a...
In Still River. It was a town next. And Mrs. Alcott was also not entranced, because apparently this person he was had set up this community with decided that it should be a celibate community. And according to what I heard, Mrs. Alcott wasn't happy with that idea. And, of course, they had the four little girls out there. And so, you know, I think these people almost starved, among other things.
Yeah. Kind of crazy.
Kind of crazy. Intriguing.
Yeah.
It's a time of other idealistic communities like Brook Farm, which was set up in, I guess, set where Roxbury is now, was another idealistic community where people like Margaret Fuller went to live. And I mean, all these fuzz-headed people like Bronson Alcott and Margaret Fuller, who that their experimental communities didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. We are also involved one way and another with non-profit, small non-profit organizations in Guilford, Vermont, where, as you heard earlier, we spend a major amount of our time. The Guilford Historical Society and Guilford Preservation Incorporated and Guilford Community Church and what else? Pleasant ways of relating to the small community of Guilford, which has a population of about 2,500 souls, and where my great-grandfather bought a farm in 1868 and started a mineral springs resort with a couple of business partners. And Guilford Mineral Springs Farm unlike Poland Spring and some others did not flourish for many years, but fortunately he didn't sell the farm. It still is in the family. It's owned by a family trust, or the original farmhouse is. My brother and I agreed in 1992 that we would lose nothing if we took the major part of the acreage. We got a land use planner and of the 200 or so acres, we separated out 175 acres and deeded it to Vermont Land Trust and New England Forestry Foundation. The actual physical ownership is New England Forestry Foundation and Vermont Land Trust has a overriding restriction, conservation restriction. New England Forestry Foundation is a non-profit woodland operator. My parents never wanted to do anything to cut a tree, but I felt and still feel that unless they're of unique value, that a wood should be managed as a working asset, and that's what this so-called Springs Farm is managed. It has been selectively logged in places and under the present ownership. So what else do I need to recount as to my pastimes?
I think one of the things that's always interested me about Fruitlands is that Clara Endicott Sears was like several other single Boston Brahmin types who made, I mean, almost like Mrs. Gardner of the Gardner Museum, who made a collection and who had a lot of money and you know, essentially built a museum of one size or another and endowed it. And I don't know whether that's a typical Boston thing of that era.
And well, like Isabella Stewart Gardner,
yes.
And who did it more spectacularly and better known in Boston. The Gardner Museum is I guess internationally known, and her collection of 18th century European art is almost untouchable.
Well, I'm just struck by both of your sense of giving at every level. I mean, I'm sitting here wondering what makes some people give so much. You could be sitting home. It doesn't sound like you sit around home very much. You're always going to meetings. You're always giving. You're always thinking about the community. Going out to town meeting. I mean, where does that come from, and how does that get passed along?
Well, I think to some extent that's inherited. My father took a active interest in my father when he retired. My parents moved to Guilford, Vermont, and father had a role in the financial governance of this small town for quite a number of years, and your father, of course, was a member of the elected town meeting.
He was an elected town meeting member in Belmont.
Belmont,
which is, it wasn't an open town meeting. You had to run to be a Belmont town meeting member. But then, of course, that had the responsibility of going to the town meeting and studying the issues and following them. But I was also thinking in terms of giving and so forth, maybe not so much as of time as of money, but your grandmother certainly was very generous in giving an organ to Manuel Church, is that right, in Boston?
That's right. Yeah. Well, her husband, my father's father, died in 1914 at the age of 49, and he'd been can't think of the term, a lay leader of Emmanuel Church.
Well, I guess he was junior warden.
Junior warden.
So, yeah.
And his widow gave, as Barbara said, a pipe organ, which still, I haven't been in Emmanuel Church for many years, but I believe the organ is still there. Certainly the plaque must be in memory of Silas Reed Anthony.
How does it get passed along? I try to imagine, even at something as traditional as the town meeting, you know, are we seeing older people? Are we seeing younger people? How is that legacy of contributing passed along to new members of the community? If it is.
Well, I guess it is, certainly. And observing the action and behavior of somebody that you think is worth following.
Mm-hmm. I think often in Concord, people first get really interested in the details of town affairs when they have children in the public schools and the various issues that come up at town meeting affect them quite close to home. And the next thing they know, they're really interested in having a good school system. And the next thing they know, somebody talks them into being on the PTA or whatever. And so I think that's how the young people get attracted to this activity, that it isn't just all the old types who are interested. Of course, people also get interested if there's a proposal for a development in their neighborhood and they don't happen to like it. They can get awfully interested in what the planning board is doing and go to a lot of planning board meetings, and the next thing they know, somebody probably puts them on the planning board.
Although in Concord it seems sometimes that there isn't enough of this. There isn't enough competition for elective office, it sometimes appears.
And, yes, that's true.
Occasionally.
What about development? People keep mentioning these McMansions. What effect has that had on community relations, if any, or are the newcomers getting just as involved because they have children in school? Are people integrating as they come in?
I don't happen to know any of them.
Any of who?
What's that? I don't happen to know any. We don't have any League of Women Voters board members who live in McMansions, so I haven't happened to rub elbows with and I don't know. I suppose they get integrated with the people. Their children go to school with other people, and that's how they get to meet them, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know either. I forgot to mention, Sudbury Valley Trustees?
Oh, yeah, you did forget to mention
that. That's an organization that it's a land conservation organization based in Wayland, formed in 1953, and I became interested in it in the late 1950s and became treasurer of it in, I think, 1960 for a few years. And it owns parcels of undeveloped land acquired either by gift or purchase in 15 or 20 towns in the Sudbury, Assabet, and Concord River
basins.
In Concord, it owns two parcels, which, as it happens, I arranged the purchase of many years ago. But in Wayland and Sudbury and a number of other towns, it owns much more land, and its total ownership, I guess, is around 4,000 or 5,000 acres, and it's been instrumental in the acquisition of a great many thousand acres held by various towns and other organizations. And I should have mentioned it earlier, because I went to a meeting the other day that was a presentation at a retirement community nearby, explaining what Sudbury Valley Trustees does. And I have no role in the governance of it at all now, except I try to give it a little money. It has taken a lot of time in my past.
So it's a similar to a land trust, or a,
yeah,
but not exactly.
Well, it's simply a land holding organization, as opposed to Massachusetts Audubon Society, which not only holds land but operates educational facilities on the land, and conducts all kinds of programs and so on.
Because we have the Concord Land Trust as well, is that correct?
Concord Land Conservation Trust is comparable to Sudbury Valley Trustees.
But this is...
But within Concord only.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the parcels you acquired. That's a feat.
Yeah, well, one of them I happened to become aware of because of the demise of the owner and...
Sorry?
The demise of the land owner, it was quite near to where we lived, and I determined that it could be bought for a few thousand dollars, and I arranged for Sudbury Valley Trustees to buy it. It was undeveloped woodland. I then spent quite a lot of time trying to persuade an abutting landowner to add to it, but she assured me that her land was never going to be developed. It's now one of the largest developments in the town, of course.
Three and four car garages.
Yeah, her children developed it after her death, and so much for that. The other piece that I bought for Sudbury Valley Trustees was popularly known as Thoreau Bog, simply because Thoreau mentions it in some of his writings. It is a bog, and it's in off Lexington Road. It's a small strip of rather unusual wetland that belonged to a couple that we knew, Salvatore and Helen Muscato. And
help me with that spelling.
Muscato. He drove a truck for a propane distributor, and Helen cleaned houses. They were long-time Italian-American Concord residents, and I persuaded them to sell this part of their land. I don't
That's all we have time for today.
Which gave me great satisfaction.
I'd say. Final questions from you, Michael?
No, I think it's been thorough and good.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Not thorough and good, but thorough and
good. I wasn't sure where you were.
Thorough and good.
Yeah.
We need to boogie on back to the library.
Okay. Well, it's been fun.
Yes, yeah.
Wish you every...
Thank you both.